Good evening.
Glad you're here. Welcome.
We're in Matthew chapter 5. We're studying the life of Christ. Specifically, we're studying the Sermon on the Mount. And in particular, in the Sermon on the Mount, we're in Matthew chapter 5. And kind of the key verse for the whole, about last, 18 verses of the chapter is found in verse 20. Right? Our righteousness needs to surpass the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. That our righteousness, our standard, our aim in life is not the standards of men, but that Jesus has come to establish His standard of righteousness, and we're to aim for that. That His standards are to be our standards. And in order to know what our standards are to be, Jesus then clarifies some of those things that we need to achieve in our lives. And the first of which, beginning in verse 21, is His standard of righteousness regarding what?
Thoughts and anger.
Our thoughts, and specifically regarding anger. And again, He compares it to what they had established. Regarding anger, their standard of righteousness was do anything but... Yeah, just don't kill them, and you're okay. And Jesus said, that I say to you, again, don't even think that. Don't even say those words. Don't even go down that path in terms of, again, being angry with your brother. Again, for what? Because they've sinned and you're disappointed in? No, because it's a selfish anger that He's speaking against. And then a couple weeks ago, and then Dave continued with the study last week, talked about Jesus' standard regarding lust and our relationship with men and women. And again, Jesus said that the standard, according to them, was what? Yeah, don't commit the act of adultery. Okay? And so to draw the line there and get as close to it as you possibly can, but just don't cross that line. But Jesus said, I say to you, don't even begin to have that thought process in your heart. That if you begin to lust after a woman. So we're going to continue a little bit with that. And again, I've asked you a couple times to think about how all of these, because we're talking now about lust, we're talking about anger, and then we're going to talk about what? The subject of marriage. And then right after marriage, Jesus talks about what? Keeping your word. Do what you say you're going to do. And again, think about how anger, lust, and keeping your word, what they have to do with the aspect of marriage. One of my favorite verses, Ezra chapter 7, verse 10, said, it said, Ezra set his heart to do three things. Number one, study the law of the Lord. Number two, to practice it. Number three, to teach it in all of Israel. When we think about the Sermon on the Mount and Jesus' standard of righteousness, number one, do we need to study it, know it? But as we study these standards, there's things for us to do, aren't there? There's things for us to practice. Practice in terms of things we are to do, and practice in terms of things that we ought not to do. And then the third aspect of Jesus' standard of righteousness is, can we teach it? And can we teach what His standard is to others? And so as we think again about these standards of righteousness regarding anger, regarding lust, regarding marriage, regarding our commitments, regarding revenge, again, do I know what the standard is? Number two, am I practicing it and actually living it? And then number three, am I equipped so I can teach others what that standard is and how they can live pleasing before God? So as we go through these things, let's remember that. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 5. And if nothing else, as we have slowly been proceeding through the Sermon on the Mount, and we keep reading the context, if we keep reading it, hopefully, again, it will be committed to our hearts and minds. But if I can get someone to read verse 20, and we'll go down through verse 32. Matthew 5, 20 through 32. Nick?
5, in verse 20. For I say to you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no wise enter into the kingdom of heaven. Ye heard that it was said to them of old time, thou shalt not kill. Whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you, everyone who is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment. Whosoever shall say to his brother Lachish shall be in danger of the council. Whosoever shall say thou who shall be in danger of the hell of fire. Give therefore thou offering thy gift at the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath ought against thee. Leave there thy gift before the altar and go thy way. First be reconciled unto thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Grieve with thine adversary quickly while thou art in the way. Happily the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer. Thou be cast into prison. Verily I say unto you, thou shalt by no means come out thence till thou have paid the last farthing. Ye have heard it was said, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that everyone that looketh on a woman with lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. If thy right eye causes thee to stumble, pluck it out, cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee. If one of thy members should perish, and not thy whole body be cast into hell. And if thy right hand causes thee to stumble, cut it off and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not thy whole body go into hell. It was also said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a right of divorcement. But I say unto you that everyone that putteth away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, maketh her an adulteress. And whosoever shall marry her when she is put away committeth adultery.
All right, so as David taught class last week, he talked about the fact that Jesus' standard of righteousness begins long before the act of adultery takes place. And again, if we're going to achieve his standard, we're going to back the truck up, as it were, and say, I need to start thinking about my thoughts, about my heart, about what I'm thinking about and where my thoughts are leading me long before I'm in a position where I'm about to commit the sin of adultery. And if you're about to commit the sin of adultery, do you need to stop? But where should you have stopped long ago?
Way before
you even physically were in that position, before when you start to think about it. And so it begins in our heart. Again, we've emphasized Matthew chapter 15, verse 18 and 19. That again, out of the heart come all these sins, including adultery. That's where it starts. And so we need to control. We need to watch over our heart with all dealings. We have to be careful then about what enters our heart. And we'll talk about these passages. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, again, watch over your heart with all diligence. We'll talk about Job 31:1 and Romans 13:13-14 in a little bit. But, again, those come into play here. David brought up the point of an example of Joseph last week, right, in terms of his thought process before he ever got into that position with Potiphar's wife. He was already thinking about the fact that, again, adultery was something that he thought in his mind, I can't do this against my God. Again, that was his mindset, that with, you know, someone who is not my wife, I can't do this because it's against my God, my Father in heaven. And that's, again, where it begins. And, David, I appreciate you bringing out this passage last week. You talked about the fact that out of the abundance, or that which fills the heart, and you referenced Matthew chapter 12, verse 34. And again, I tacked on verse 35, where Jesus says, you brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills, or again, the translation you use, or the abundance of the heart. The American Standard says that which fills the heart. The good man, out of his good treasure, brings forth what is good, and the evil man, out of his evil treasures, brings forth what is evil. And it brings across the point, again, if I'm going to seek to be right with God according to Jesus' standard of righteousness, again, in terms of what I need to do, we think to ourselves, well, I just can't think that. And that's right, we can't think those things. But what do I need to do so that I don't think those things? And again, this verse, I think, explains it.
The answer is think other things. Think good things.
Because, I don't know about you, our heads are only, or our brains are only capable of holding so much, right? We can't fit everything in there. But what should we be stuffing our hearts and minds with?
Righteousness.
Righteousness.
Leonardo? You know, I'm thinking that with the, you call your brother a fool. Basically, you're using a pejorative, right? But Jesus called them a brood of vipers. That's a pejorative right there. Why is it a sin to call your brother a fool? Is it a sin to call your brother a snake?
Well, again, what did Jesus describe them in Matthew chapter 23?
Hypocrites.
Repeatedly. Again, number one, you want to know what did Jesus have the ability to do that you and I can't do?
They'll be what was in their hearts.
Did the Lord know what was in their heart?
Oh, okay, so you're saying if it's true, then you can say it. And you really know that.
Well, and Mickey, I know you make a point from Acts chapter 13. What did the Apostle Paul say regarding?
Well, he was very pointed as it pertained to demons, calling a son of hell a full of villain. Very, very pointed.
Right. Now, did he ever, again, as we made the point about anger and thou fool and Raca, it was more than just being, you know, again, it was using terms that devalued their soul. I mean, it devalued their, you know, it was to morally look down on someone. To simply point out that someone's hypocrisy is not to say you're not worth it. Okay? And sometimes, are there times where, Leonardo, you and I may have to have a frank conversation. And then if you knew that I'm acting hypocritically, would it be appropriate for you to come to Chris? I got to be very frank with you. You're being a hypocrite. And use very pointed language with me in terms of things that I need to fix. Would that be appropriate?
I think so.
Would that be to, you know, the equivalent of saying thou fool, though?
No.
No.
Well, I was just saying that when your parents tell you to do so and you don't do it, it's like, do as I say, not as I do. But Jesus can say, do as I say, do as I do. He is the one who sets standards, basically.
Right. Now, again, we don't want to be hypocritical about, you know, like I said, do as I say, not as I do. But again, Jesus, in pointing out the hypocrisy, in pointing out that again, you're endangering the souls of other people, you brood vipers. You're costing people their spiritual lives. It's not to say I'm devaluing your soul. But what you're doing is spiritually dangerous.
Before you go on, though, so if you call your brother a fool or an idiot or stupid, anything like that, you're putting them down in such a way that it's sin.
We need to be careful about the words we choose when we're confronting somebody's sin. Absolutely. I think James first, right?
So two things there. I think we need to remember again that anger is something that's being dealt with. So anger is a motive behind all of this. But also, I think there's a big difference between name-calling and cutting somebody down and then making a statement of fact based on things that people have done. That's what you're getting at. When you sit down with somebody and you hold their feet to the fire, as it were, you're telling them, look, this is what you're doing, and you're not doing it to name-call, you're not doing it to hurt their feelings, you're doing it because you're pointing out what they're doing. You're making statements of fact. This isn't just slapping somebody in the face and browbeating them and then having personal anger as a motive behind it.
Right. Absolutely. Randy?
We kind of touched on this when we've asked this by the first time, but the sins listed in 22 are sins that are leading toward murder. That's what you said earlier. He's trying to nip it at the bud. Before it gets to murder, you shouldn't even go down that path. And what he's talking about here is the path first, the anger. And then the you fool, or the you good for nothing, and then you fool. But though both of those are accusations that are basically putting yourself in God's place. That's a judgment call. Calling somebody a fool is, you've made yourself judge. Now, I'm your judge, I'm righteous, and you're a fool. And that's what the sin is. The sin is that we're putting ourselves in God's place. Jesus is God. When he looked at somebody and said, you brood of vipers, he had every right to do that because he was judging their soul. He could see what kind of soul they had.
Right, absolutely.
We don't have that right.
And again, but if he knew their hearts, that their hearts were evil.
And again, we have that responsibility. If I see you doing something evil, Leonardo, should I come to you?
I think so.
Yeah, and say, Leonardo, that's evil of you to do that. That's wrong. And we need to correct that. And sometimes, again, even amongst brethren, we need to get some things pointed about the fact that someone is not living right, someone is hypocritical, and they know better.
I think the thing is that Jesus' statement, for example, you brood of vipers, he was able, as we've discussed, he knew what they were. But we can only think what we think they are. And so all we can do is make the suggestions that have been made by Jesus. Right. We can't, as you've mentioned, we don't know their minds.
We can only, based on actions, on words, on, again, the things that we hear and the things right. that we see. But again, my point here about lust is, again, if we're I think we're all in agreement, right? We're stopping well short of committing the act. We're starting with our thoughts. But again, how do we get our thoughts to where they need to be? And again, this passage that David brought out last week about the abundance or that which fills the heart. And again, in terms of setting our heart to study, to practice here. And here's the practice. Filling your heart, again, with the abundance of his righteousness. And again, it's interesting, in this passage, let me read it once again, for the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The idea, the literal meaning there, a surplus or superabundance. And so when we think of that which is to be a superabundance or a surplus within our hearts, what does that have to say about our study habits, our reading of God's Word, our efforts to worship? Should it be sporadic? Should it be occasional? It cannot be. It can't be. Our study, our meditation, our reflection, our prayer, our worship, it can't be occasional and sporadic. We've got to fill our hearts. It has to be the abundance in our hearts. If we're going to make sure that, again, that thought of lust doesn't even take root. It doesn't even get started. And it says, Jesus went on to say, the good man out of his good treasure brings forth what is good. The evil man out of his evil treasure brings forth what is evil. Later on in the Sermon on the Mount, what did Jesus have to say about treasure?
Yeah, lay up for your treasure, Chris. Yeah, to lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven and not on earth.
You ever think, again, a very practical thing, what exactly, you know, that's something to do, right? How do I lay up treasure in heaven? I know how to lay up treasure upon earth. You go to the bank and you take a check or you take some cash and you deposit it. But how do I practically do that in terms of laying up treasure in heaven? Understand this, and this is interesting to me. The word for treasure in both Matthew 12 and Matthew 6 means a deposit. I mean, you think, well, duh, yeah, to lay up for yourself treasure means you go to the bank and you deposit something. And if you go every week and deposit $100 every week, what happens? Over time, you develop a treasure. Right? I started at my job almost to the day 31 years ago. And I remember filling out the paperwork for what our equivalent of a 401k plan is. You ever remember looking at those of you who it started like a 401k account? You remember what it looked like after your first deposit? It didn't look like anything, did it?
Right.
And you're like,
Why did I have this money? It's just a little something. What happened after the second paycheck and the second amount went in there?
It grows.
Okay. What happens after 10, 20, 30 years?
Compounded.
After 30 years of making those deposits, what do you have?
You have a treasure. But again, how do we do that spiritually?
By every day, you make a spiritual deposit. And again, what types of things can we do to make a spiritual deposit?
Reading, studying, prayer.
Reading, studying, prayer, worship, teaching others. You know what I mean?
I was going to read Philippians 4:8.
Okay.
Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there's any excellence, anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things.
That's make a deposit.
That's what we put in our hearts.
Yeah. And so we have to be very careful about, and again, that's a matter of use of time, isn't it? We make deposits by how we spend our time.
It's interesting we talk about making deposits, and that's right. But we can also make withdrawals. And that's what gets us into trouble. Someone told me a couple of years ago that when we are tempted, it withdraws often from our faith. And if we're not making deposits to increase our faith, what's eventually going to happen to our faith?
Well, right. If I don't make any deposits to the bank account, can I withdraw anything? They'll look at me and go, there's nothing here for you to withdraw. But again, if I have been every week putting making a deposit, and that time comes that my faith is being challenged, that's exactly the point, right? And so, again, I just think, and again, a couple of weeks ago, I used a Mickey phrase that, remember, a step does not a walk make. Does a deposit a treasure make? It doesn't matter what you do one time. It's what you do every day. And it's those daily, spending time with God's Word, meditating on it, and praying about it, and talking with others about it, and worshiping with others. It's those things that we do every day. And so a deposit does not a treasure make, but regular, repeated, day-by-day deposits do. And there is a... Somebody wrote a paper once about the one coin theory. That if I took a dollar coin and gave it to Richard, again, is he rich? If I gave him another coin, is he rich? At some point in time, though, if I keep giving dollar coins to him, at some point in time, he would say he's rich. But where does it begin?
With
the first one, and the second one, and the third one. And so, again, when we think about, again, preventing lust at the heart, it goes back to, again, what fills the heart with the abundance of our heart, and making sure that we've made those deposits. So that, again, when we're tempted by lust, we can withdraw from that because we know we've made those deposits about what the right thing to think about is. And we can respond with the Word of God. And again, we can withdraw when necessary.
And now, I wonder, as a treasure, he says, lay not up for yourself treasures. It must not mean saving.
It must not mean what?
Saving.
Is there,
you don't have
savings? Well, it's very similar, but again, it's kind of like, is Jesus telling us it's sinful to have a bank account? No. But where is our focus? What's the most important thing in your life?
If you're
going through life with, there's a choice to lay up treasure upon earth. That is to, and we're going to talk about James 4:1 in just a moment. We're going to spend it on our pleasures or on our lust, the things that please self. Or I can make a spiritual deposit, and I can go study, I can go pray, I can go worship, I can do those things. And I have that choice. It's not saying I can't have a bank account. It's not saying that we don't plan for a retirement.
So when he said don't do it, he said what he really means, don't do it a lot.
But again, what does he say? I think it goes to verse 34 of that chapter. What are we to seek first? His kingdom and his righteousness. Making spiritual power. Seek that first. Okay? It's like what Jesus said to, you know, that we were to hate our father and mother. What does that actually mean?
To love last.
To love him first and to love physical family last. When it comes to laying up treasures in heaven and not upon earth, we're to lay up treasures first above all else. Okay? So again, we can go to passages like 1 Timothy 5 about are we to provide for our families? Yeah. And so do I need to make sure that in this day and age that I've done what I need to do to provide for the basic needs of my family? Yes. Does that mean sometimes I make a deposit into my bank account? Mm. Yeah.
I think what you're saying is you put God first in your life and all this other stuff will come. It will come.
It'll come. Yeah. And well said. And we'll get there in chapter 6, absolutely. So again, I just wanted to ping off what that verse that David brought up last week, because I think that's just critical in terms of, again, what we set our heart to practice. Because in practicing this standard of righteousness means making spiritual deposits every day, not a single deposit at one point in time. And so I think that's critical. Now, going back to Matthew chapter 5, then, in this context, again, but I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in her heart. And then he says in verse 29, and this is kind of graphic language, isn't it? It kind of confronts you. He says, if your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you. In verse 30, if your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. How serious is Jesus about you and I, again, nipping this in the bud? Very serious. And what is it that we should do, and how, and to what extent should we go to prevent lust from taking root in our hearts?
Every means at your disposal.
By any means possible, right? Okay. Is there any sacrifice too much to prevent us from lusting in our heart and sinning against God and costing us our soul? Is there any sacrifice too much? Is that the point here?
Can we take that literally?
We'll get there in just a moment, but it's not about... Is it about self-mutilation?
No.
Because I'll tell you in a minute, tearing out your eye won't do something that needs to happen. Okay, so is it too much if it meant going to hell instead of heaven? No. Should we be going to, as it were, pluck out our eye if that would make it possible? What about cutting off our arm or our right hand? And again, he's using by right hand is, for most of us, is that our most important hand?
Yes.
Yeah? John?
But these are metaphors here. He's not addressing self-mutilation, as we would call it.
Right, no.
What he's basically saying here is, go to heaven at all costs.
Whatever it takes for you to ensure that lust doesn't reign in your heart.
Right, because the problem, like you said, won't be solved by putting out your eye and cutting out your arm.
But there's
the problem is in the heart.
There's some very practical things, though, that will come home. Mm-hmm. In terms of you and I saying, okay, I'm going to make that sacrifice. Okay? That it may not be cutting off my hand, but even if it did take that, the point is, make whatever sacrifice is necessary. Okay? Again, it's not just your eye or your right hand, but what else? What other sacrifice do you need to make so that it will not happen and cost you your soul? What does it profit a man if he what? Gains the whole world and loses his soul.
You cut that out of your heart, you won't have that problem.
Correct.
Noah?
If you're not married, you are in service of a spouse or a mate. I'm reading the verse, and it's saying to avoid adultery. But if you're wanting to meet somebody, obviously, you know, you're going to see if you guys are attracted to each other and stuff like that. But don't let your mind go too far, obviously. But it's more of a, you know,
I'm going. Well, no, I mean, I think about, you know, John chapter 16, and did Jesus propose, quote, taking us out of the world? No, it's not that we can, you know, go to some island where we can, you know, be sure that there's never going to be an opportunity for lust. But again, it's about preparing our heart. And again, let's remember this. Sometimes it's going to mean making a sacrifice. Okay? It may cost us something that maybe in and of itself is not sinful. But I know myself and I know my heart and I know I can't go there.
If I made a use an illustration, when I first started preaching, I met a man who was an older man, but he claimed that he was an alcoholic. He said, "I am only one drink away from being drunk." He said, "I know I cannot drink one drop. I can't do it." And to resolve the problem, he stayed away from any place where it was, lest he be tempted. I think there's an application. That's just one thing.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
But the application to be made is, if I have a problem with this, stay away from it. Don't dabble with it.
Absolutely.
If you have a problem with pornography, be careful what you watch. Be careful where you go. Be careful what you read.
Yep.
You know, that's just the rule that Jesus is stating here. He's not talking about self-mutilation.
No.
Mutilate himself and still have the same exact problem.
Well, we're going to get there, yeah.
I think Paul was saying it's better to marry than to burn. Some people say burn with passion, right? So then that kind of suggests that somebody lusting.
Yeah.
But it's not a sin if that person is willing to marry. If that person.
Well,
he might be running for passion.
Are they eligible to marry? I mean, the question would be out there. But God designed for man and woman to fulfill their sexual desires within the bonds of marriage.
Yes.
And again, that's Hebrews chapter 13. That's right, and that's holy. So that there, you know, God did create an avenue, a relationship for that to be fulfilled in.
And just a semi-tangent on this, as we studied last week, the word lust is not always used in a bad sense.
No, it's not.
It's just a strong desire.
Right.
And so I can have a strong desire if I'm single for another single woman without it going to adultery or fornication.
Right. And can you have a strong passion and desire for your wife?
Yes.
Yes.
But then I think it's not called lust.
Well,
it's called something else. I think it's called lust when it's illicit.
That's the point. Not always.
What is it?
The we covered this, you know, a couple weeks ago. The word lust in and of itself is neither right nor wrong.
Okay.
It simply means a strong desire, and the word in the Greek language is used in the New Testament for good things. Okay. So it depends on what you're lusting or longing or have a strong passion or desire for. Okay, which defines whether or not it's right or sinful. Okay, so again, what are we willing to give up? It's interesting in this context in Matthew 5, he says it's better if you cut off your right hair than to be cast in the hell. The idea of better, meaning it's more profitable. I mean, it literally, in terms of, again, using an accounting term here, you're coming out ahead. If you had to make the greatest sacrifice in the world, but you still went to heaven because you controlled your thoughts and you controlled lust, it's better. And those same words are used in 1 Corinthians 6:12 and chapter 10, verse 23, when Paul said, "All things are lawful for me, but not all things are profitable. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be mastered by anything." It's that idea that there are some things that in and of themselves are okay, but Paul says they're not profitable for me. They're not helping me get to heaven. And I'm not going to be mastered by those things. And so we need to think about what's better. Again, what's going to get me to where I want to be? And here's, again, to the point I think Mickey was getting at, where I was trying to head.
what would tearing out your eye or cutting off your hand not address?
Your heart.
It doesn't change your heart, does it?
Leonardo, if I cut off my right hand because I'm lusting, but it don't change my heart and it don't change my mind, does that fix anything?
Yeah, but I think that if you're willing to cut your hand off, you must have a right intention. When we're told to flee fornication, that's somebody fleeing from temptation. They want to do what's right, even though they are aware of there's temptation here.
I understand your point, but as Mickey has preached on repentance recently, you make the point that just because, again, we may make some sacrifice, but if we have made that sacrifice and we didn't change our heart, is that repentance?
No.
And so again, sometimes we'll make sacrifices, but we didn't do it because we changed our heart. You see what I'm saying? And if we don't change our heart, again, making some sacrifice, like, again, if we thought cutting off our right hand would help, but we don't change our heart, it's not accomplishing anything. That's all I'm trying to get the point of first.
Yeah, because sin is always creeping at the door.
Okay. If we don't change our heart, right?
Just because you cut your eye out and chop your head off, it's going to be here. How are you going to react towards that?
Right. John?
I was just going to make the point that if you don't change your heart, you haven't really addressed the root of the problem.
Right. Exactly. And that's where, again, we're trying to exactly get at the root of the problem. And to understand, again, there are sacrifices that need to be made. And that may include, again, we talked about, there could be some very real sacrifices. For example, are there places where guys that we know there will be modestly dressed women there? And if we have a problem with that, should I make the sacrifice and not go there if I know I can't control it? And let's be real about this. And then I heard a preacher one time talk about the fact that he says, well, he was talking with a young man, he says, well, I can go where women are immodestly dressed and scantily clad, and it doesn't bother me a bit. He looked at him and goes, what planet are you from?
I figure a guy that would lie about that would lie about anything.
Let's not forget the chief rulers that, where the scripture says many believed on him, but they wouldn't confess him because they feared they'd be put out of the temple. So here's an example of people that were not willing to make the sacrifice. Now, it would have been a very tough sacrifice to make. You have to basically take your position or your career and be willing to cast it aside. And this was a sacrifice they were not willing to make. So I'm just bolstering your point, Chris, that sometimes to be right with God, you do have to make a real sacrifice. It's very difficult. Sometimes you're in that situation. And we see here that there were people that were not willing to make that sacrifice because their position was more valuable. It meant more to them than being right with God.
There's a movie that I've been out there for a number of years. I think some of you have seen it, called Fireproof. It deals with marriage. And one of the things that was killing this marriage was the fact that the husband was engaged in pornography. And in this movie, they make the point that sometimes for the sake of the marriage, you've got to get rid of, they use the term, the parasites. And you know what he had to do with his computer? He got rid of it. He got rid of it. What's it going to take for us? What's the sacrifice that we need to make so that we make sure it doesn't happen?
You know that rich, I think he was a young ruler.
Yeah.
When Jesus told him, he was asking, what must I do to be saved, right? And he said, you lack one thing, sell all that you have and come follow me. He wasn't willing.
Yeah.
I think if he had been willing to say, okay, I'm going to do it, that would show that he had the right heart. Right there. If he isn't willing to give everything up.
So what's the sacrifice that you and I need to make to make sure it doesn't happen to us? Does it mean that I don't go to movies anymore?
Well, I mean, the sacrifice varies from person to person. I mean, I may not have to give up my computer, but somebody else might.
Yeah.
You know, if that's a temptation.
Right. No, I'm not. asking, you know, that there's a standard, but you're absolutely right.
What is it that you in your life need to sacrifice so that you can ensure that lust or anger or other things don't take place?
Well, I just deleted Facebook.
Because what's the consequence of not doing whatever it takes?
Hell.
It'll cost you your soul to go into hell, or to literally to go away or depart into everlasting punishment. If we're again to that point of that rich young ruler, if we're not willing to make whatever sacrifice, and I have to ask myself, and you have to ask yourself, what is that sacrifice I need to make? The word lose here, again, to lose your arm or to lose your eye, to destroy fully more than a part of our body. And here's the point that several of you have been making. It's not about losing your eye or losing your hand. What are we told that we need to lose that's much greater than a hand or an eye?
Lose yourself.
You need to lose yourself, your life. Somebody want to read Matthew 10:39? Randy, you got that? Richard's already got it.
He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loses his life for my sake shall find it.
Is that a lot more than the hand or the eye?
It is.
It is. That's a lot more. You need to lose your life. What's that mean?
Again, it's a metaphor. It doesn't mean, you know, actual physical death. It means you have to die to sin.
Well, it means that what you used to live for, you don't live for anymore. What did Paul have to say about what he used to live for versus what he lives for now? Galatians 2, verse 20, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who lives. Christ lives in me. In the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith. The Son of God who loved me and delivered himself up for me. Paul said, you look at Philippians chapter 3.
Yep.
Go ahead. Read that. You want to read
that's
that?
That's right. Yeah. I got my finger right.
So go ahead.
Yeah. Paul is talking about himself where he says, verse 4, although I might have confidence even in the flesh, if anyone else has a mind to put confidence in the flesh, I far more. Circumcised the eighth day of a nation of Israel, the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law of Pharisee, as to zeal of prophet, persecutor, to the church and to the righteousness which is in the law, found blameless. But whatever things were gained to me, those things I have counted as loss for the sake of Christ. He uses the word in the other versions, rubbish. He called them rubbish.
But he lost
his sake of Christ.
He lost his life.
Yeah. He
goes well. Not that he misplaced it.
He didn't sacrifice much, did he?
He sacrificed his life, yeah. Absolutely. So, according to Luke chapter 12, verses 4 and 5, what should we fear? Should we fear?
We could throw you into hell.
We should fear not making the sacrifice we need to make and coming short. That should scare us to death. Fear him who is able to destroy both body and soul. Don't worry about your physical appearance. On the earlier chart, I had 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 through 10. That's where Paul had prayed to God for what? Removal of the thorn in the flesh. And that's where God told Paul what? My grace is sufficient for you. It's not about our physical bodies, our fleshly lives. It's about the grace of God. So what is the cure? Real quickly. Number one, even before we apply, Proverbs 4:23 and Job 31:1. Somebody read that real quick, Job 31:1.
Job 31:1, make the covenant with my eyes, how then should I look upon the virgin?
Job said, I've made a covenant, I made a promise with my eyes, I'm not going to look at things. I'm not going to look at anyone that's going to lead me away. But even before we apply Proverbs 4:23 or Job 31:1 or Romans 13:13 and 14, which talk about making no provisions for the lust of the flesh, don't go where you know that the lust of the flesh are going to be alive and tempting you. Even before we apply that, where is our focus and our mindset? Because even if we do, let's say I know that I can't go to the beach down there because I know that I can't handle it, and I know I'm going to lust if I'm there, and so I'm not going to go there, but my heart and my mind is still on the things of the earth, and I'm still thinking earthly thoughts, I still have an earthly mindset. Because I didn't go there, has that cured it? And so my point is, we've got to start with a heart that's set on the things above. That what my whole mindset is, I'm thinking about God, I'm thinking about spiritual things. I'm not even thinking about a woman from a physical point of view. I'm thinking she's a brother or sister. She's a sister in Christ. She's a soul that's lost. Joan?
I know we already referenced this verse, but I think it bears repeating again. We see Jesus' incredible and brilliant statement when he asks the rhetorical question, what shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul?
Yeah.
That's a rhetorical question with an obvious answer. And the point is that he's making there's nothing.
Right, there's nothing. Yeah.
Nothing.
So number one, like I said, we've got to set our minds on the things above. We've got to have a spiritual mindset. Again, 1 Corinthians 2:14 to 3:3, talking about the fact, if you're still fleshly, can you even understand what, you know, the will of God? Does it make sense to you? Are you going to subject yourselves to it?
Well, obviously, last week we talked about Joseph and David.
Yeah.
And we see a big contrast between Joseph and David. Joseph's mind was on God.
Right.
How can I do
right.
this great
he
sin?
He set his mind on
and
things
all
above.
David had to do was just turn around and walk back into his palace.
Yeah.
He stood there and watched.
His mind was set on the things of the earth. So that's right. To me, start there with that mindset. Then number two, now let's control the mind. Let's, again, Randy, Philippians 4, let's think on these things. If we think on these things with a fleshly mindset, is that going to work? No. So set our minds on the things above, control the mind and control the thoughts. Don't go where temptation reigns. And again, let's be honest with ourselves, we know where that is. We know where that is.
And that's where I think that we need to be proactive. You know, you say, I don't want to go to the beach because I can't control my lust. But the fact of the matter is that I know that if I go to the beach, I'll see things that could tempt me. And therefore, there's absolutely no reason for me to go there in the first place, whether or not I can control my lust.
Right, and again, as the priest said, let's be real, okay? Let's be real. But again, set your minds on the things above. Learn to control your thoughts. Don't go where temptation reigns. Number four, consider the source of our lust. Again, James chapter 4, verse 1, again, asks that very question. Where James says, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is it not the source? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war on your brethren? So we need to stop and think, what is it that's prompting that? Number five, we need to learn to deny self, that ability to, again, simply say no to self. And say, I know what I want. And I've got to learn to say no. And number six, we talked about this with anger, the ability to flee and pursue that. It's not enough to not go where I shouldn't go. I need to then pursue the things that are right and go to the places where I know I should be. So again, it is serious. It is, our souls are at stake, whether or not we can control our anger and our lust. And again, beginning next week, Lord willing, we'll focus on two verses and what Jesus had to say about marriage and divorce. And again, he is going to begin that discussion with, it is said, but I say to you. And Jesus, in his kingdom, as he reigns now, is establishing his standard of righteousness regarding marriage. Thank you so much for...
Thank you.